Chinese object you are holding contains the story of your life and the task divine will has entrusted to you.
Welcome back to Shock and Awe, the double feature podcast that celebrates all movies from the sublime to the suspicious. As always, I'm Lindsay Wilkins, and this episode is going to be a back handspring with a flip and a tuck. We are going to head into a double feature featuring the gold medalist Mitch Gaylord with a 1986 American anthem and Sergio Martino's, nearly called him Leone there, that would be a very different movie, American Rickshaw, which was a gift, I swear. And of course, who brought me this gift? Well, he's one of the busiest podcasters out there at the moment. He is the host of Action Drunkies, the co-host of The House That Screams, which I'm absolutely loving at the moment, and also the upcoming Wrath of Staff. It's the one and only Rob Antiquera. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Lindsay, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good as can be, you know?
This is true, because you were just saying that you're in the middle of a heat wave at the moment, so it must be just like air conditioning full throttle or windows open.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, most definitely. I got the AC blasting all the time over here.
Oh, I know those hot summers, like, yeah, just like air con now, don't care. Please, I'll just lie on the floor and just let it just cover me. But before we get into this amazing double feature that you brought me, I just wanted to ask how everything's going, because you are just podcasting nonstop and it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Of course, you can always find me at the Action Drunkies, where me and my brother Mac the All-Star cover all kinds of action movies. The House of Screams with my dear friend Candy and Sean and all the good people over there, Erica, Dave, Nico, and of course Mac is over there too.
Yes.
Where we talk about all the horror films. And then of course you mentioned my upcoming podcast, Wrath of Staith, a podcast retrospective on Jason Statham, Cinema's True Throat Punch King is the full official title.
As it should be.
Yeah, where I cover the filmography of Jason Statham. As we're speaking, I'm in the midst of recording the first 10 episodes of his filmography, his first 10 movies, and it's been great so far. We've had our friend Mike Scott on there, and I'm about to soon have Matt Bledsoe on there to talk some. Fine films, you know, of course, you know, being that they star Jason Statham. So, yeah, look out for that soon. I don't know when exactly I'll be dropping that particular one. I'm just compiling episodes. So, like, by the time, like, I get in a groove of actually, you know, putting out the show, I've had of a head start so I could just, you know, post at leisure and not have to worry about rushing to get an episode out, you know. But, Those are my babies I got going on so far.
No, and they're all great. What I'm really looking forward to, your Wrath of Staith, is he has such a broad career. I mean, it's not sort of just yes, he's known for his action movies and amazing. I mean, he's always sort of the bright spot, and even the action movies I'm sort of only mildly enjoying. But you've got, of course, he sort of started with the Guy Ritchie, the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And then, of course, he went on to do sometimes weird comedies and kind of, he's just got one of those careers that he always pops up in movies that you sometimes least expect. Or when I'm rewatching something, I'm like, what? Jason Statham was in this? I completely forgot.
Yeah. Also, to mention, a certain somebody's going to be on that show too. certain somebody I'm speaking to right now.
Yes, yes. And I'm really looking forward to it because it's, again, one of those, really? He was in that movie? Awesome. Kind of one. So I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be amazing. And it's going to be, I'm just so looking forward to this and this project when it comes out. But I do get the whole, I'm just going to bank a few episodes. And so I don't have to worry about get everything organized and I can just release them. And so that takes the stress out of, oh crap, I have to record like right now.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I always choose to go that way. You know, I do the same thing with Action Drunkies and, you know, that's the format I'm familiar with. So I'm just going to keep at it because it's been successful for me so far.
You might as well, because you've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to be getting into this double feature though. I did want to ask you why not. I now know the appeal of it because I watched these two movies, which I had not come across before. These were both first-time watches for me. But what is it about Mitch Gaylord?
Well, my mom is a huge gymnastics fan. Mm. She loves gymnastics. Like, even at the time we're recording this, the Olympics are underway.
They are, yes.
Yeah, and I'm certain she's waiting for the gymnastics competition to get on underway because she really loves gymnastic stuff. And of course that's how I came across Mitch Gaylord, because she was the one who introduced me to American Anthem. I discovered the movie through her, which is a movie of hers that she really likes and really enjoys. I'll get into it in my initial reaction when she first showed it to me. But like, so because of her, I've really been into gymnastics myself. You know, I love like all the, you know, the tricks and that come with it, the athleticism, because like gymnasts are really just perfect athletes, you know. The way the things they do with their body and all that stuff. And of course Mitch Gaylord is a legend in the gymnast community. You know, he's so great that he actually has two tricks that he invented that they named after him, the Gaylord 1 and the Gaylord 2, also known as the Gaylord Flip. So the man is a straight legend, so it's hard not to be a fan of him and his gymnastics career.
Yeah, you're right, especially when you watch American Anthem and you sort of realize what he's capable of, because again, I had not even heard of these movies. These had not crossed anything. I mean, I'm not that surprised about American Rickshaw, but I kind of wish I knew about American Anthem growing up, just because my dad was a gymnast. Time I came into the scene, he was all very much over and he was coaching. But I do have memories of sort of growing up in the gym. And I don't know how I'm so unsporty when both my parents are very sporty people. My mother.
Oh, no, I'm in this. Yeah, I'm not to cut you off, but I'm in the same boat as you. my parents were very well. My father is very much an athlete. My mother was very athletic.
Yeah,
but and I was neither.
Yes, I remember really loving the vault, but I could not do a round up on a bar to save myself, and cannot dive. I mean, I'm actually not a fast swimmer, but I can definitely do it. But me trying to dive into a pool is like watching someone belly flopping and on an accident when I'm trying to do a thing. So it's never been quite my thing. But my dad was a gymnast. He competed in the world champs in the early 70s and also in the Commonwealth Games, which is, just for people who don't know, the Commonwealth Games is the Olympics, but without the really good countries, America, China, Russia. It's kind of all the British Empire kind of ones. And dad would just, he went around the world. He kind of gave me the love of travel because he would just tell me all these amazing stories about visiting Japan, China, Eastern Europe, Bulgaria. He lived in Germany for 3 or 4 years when he was in his 20s training. So it was just kind of always in the background. Not that I could tell you much about it, but I remember when I was really young, we did actually have, because my older brother and sister also did a little bit of it. We had these kind of rings in the living room. Gymnastic rings. And it was for actually Pete, my brother, older brother, to practice. But unfortunately, when time I was thinking, it was just for me to swing on. It drove my mother nuts. Because every single time Joe, my brother, older brother and sister, would just get things, they'd go, yeah, we'll put Lindsay on the rings again. And I would just be swinging around the living room. completely loving it and breaking everything. I think mum accidentally threw them away one day because she was just like, what? I can't do this anymore. But yeah, so watching American Anthem was just kind of this, it's just, well, we'll get into it, but it was just this kind of, yeah, I called my dad after I watched it. I was just like, oh, Dad, I just watched a gymnastics movie and I thought of you. And he was like, well, of course you did. I'm a, yeah, but of course you did, kind of thing. So I got a little bit more emotional than I was expecting out of this very strange movie. But with that, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch American Anthem. Now, Rob, what would be the first trailer you would show for American Anthem?
Oh, definitely I got to go with Jim Cotta.
His name, Kurt Thomas. His title, three-time world gymnastics champion. His assignment, a secret mission for the United States government. His only weapon, himself. And that's all he needs. Combine the discipline, the timing, and the power of gymnastics with the explosive force of karate. And a new, all-powerful martial art is born.
Okay, I'm a little annoyed. I didn't know this movie existed either.
Jim Cotta is a 80s martial arts action gymnastics movie starring the recently passed away Olympic gymnast Kurt Thomas, who plays Jonathan Cabot. It was directed by Robert Klaus from Enter the Dragon fame. And it's a fun if hilarious movie, because it was basically the like considered to be like the predecessor of like what action star like Scott Atkins would be, even though they were doing it in Hong Kong way before that, you know, with Yuen Biao and Jackie Chan and stuff, when they were adding acrobatics to their martial arts routine. But it's a fun movie about Kurt Thomas plays like a hero named Jonathan Cabot who has to go on a mission to save a princess in an island fortress where they have to. It's basically like a most dangerous game kind of movie. Just with the crazy gymnastics, martial arts.
Yeah, it's also got a weird Indiana Jones feel to it, maybe because it's just a guy going off into sort of exotic lands, I guess, to save the sort of princess. But not only is it aerobatics and martial arts, but also gymnastics moves. I swear, there's a moment where he's on a pommel horse kicking ass. And I'm just like going, oh, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Why hasn't anyone done that before? I mean, it's tried to be disguised as something else, but it's a pommel horse, and it's just it's kind of incredible.
Yeah, most definitely.
this is going to be amazing trailer. And the trailer is amazing because you do get every single, I think, stunt he pulls in the movie. But it is martial arts. It is very sort of Shaw Brothers almost in a way, but he's pointing his toes while he's doing it because he's a gymnast, and that's what gymnasts do. And I absolutely love it. It's like an amazing floor routine where he's just like kicking people.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great movie. I have a lot of fun with it.
My first trailer, I went slightly different direction, so mine are probably going to be a little bit more basic than yours. But my first trailer is going to be Bring It On for 2001, directed by Peyton Reed.
Ever been to a cheerleading competition? We're the best. We have fun, we work hard, and we win national championships.
We have a problem.
About what? You ripped off those cheers. We've had the best squad around for years, but no one's been able to see what we can do.
We're in trouble.
But you better believe all that's gonna change this year.
I swear I had no idea.
Do you think a white girl came up with those moves?
This isn't about cheating. This is about winning.
Can we just beat these buffies down so I can go home?
Which I didn't really know he had actually done it until this watch. It's cheerleaders doing flippies and gymnastics and moves and all that kind of thing. It didn't quite work as well as it did this, because I rewatched it, and it didn't work as well as I think it used to when I was much younger, but it's still fun.
I saw that years ago. think it was playing on like MTV or something, and they're like, this is a cute little movie, you know. I haven't seen it in years though.
Oh yeah, it doesn't completely hold up. I hadn't seen it in years either, and I was like going, oh yeah, I remember liking that movie. And MTV is kind of the perfect description of it almost.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
What is your second trailer?
My second trailer is the Jeff Speakman star Street Knight.
Jeff Speakman is the perfect weapon. A cop who does things his way. The city is about to explode. But there's one man who knows no limits.
The next cop ought to know enough to stay out of the gang business.
Only a fragile truce keeps the peace.
April wants war. The city will burn.
Now, there's a new threat.
Status?
All clear. Organized.
Let's go!
Equipped. Deadly. Renegades out for revenge on the city.
The reason I picked this one was because it's also directed by Albert Magnoli, who is the director of American Anthem. It was basically the last film for Canon Pictures, the illustrious Canon group. It's basically like, you know, I wrote a review of it where I called it it's basically like a greatest hits compilation of badass cop movies, like, you know, getting in all those cliches from badass cop movies, like, you know, you have your obligatory scene in a strip club, obligatory fight scene in a warehouse, an obligatory butt in the moonbeam shot from the cop, your obligatory love scene between the cop and the love interest after both of them knowing each other for only like a day or two.
Oh, yes.
You know, it has all those great moments, and it's a perfect amalgamation of it. And of course, it has the great Jeff Speakman in it doing his amazing Kenpo karate moves. And it was really well directed by Albert Magnoli. So yeah, I thought it would be a perfect fit, you know, to go alongside.
I've been meaning to watch this for a little while. Not a little while, since last year, since I saw Perfect Weapon for the first time with, of course, Jeff Speakman, and just was kind of like, oh, this is way awesome than I thought it would be. So I need to get on to see that. But I love so I've only seen the trailer, but you're right. Even the trailer is like the greatest hits of the cop who plays by his own rules. And it looks really, really fun. And Jeff Speakman has a very weird screen appeal. I don't quite know how to describe it. It's actually kind of similar to Mitch Gaylord, to be honest. I don't quite know how to describe it other than to say it's like a Jeff Speakman-esque presence or a Mitch Gaylord-esque presence. But no, I really need to get organized and actually track a copy of this down.
Yes, yes, yes. It's I think it's unfortunately it's very hard to come by a physical copy. It never made it to a DVD. So I know there's like on eBay, you could probably find somebody making boots of it. And I know there's a copy of it on YouTube. I mean, it's not the greatest way to watch it, but it's there if you ever want to see it.
Yeah, as soon as I've been starting to I guess probably even worse since I started podcasting, I've been getting very fussy about how I watch movies now. So especially the quality, but I just need to go, you know what? I just would love to see this. And the fact that it is canon just kind of goes, no, I need to, even if it's just on YouTube, and just to experience it from beginning to end.
Right, right, right.
Again, I'm going a little bit more basic, but I changed my mind. Actually, I was going to go with one other kind of sporting fighting classic, but I'm going to go for a newer movie that was only released in 2019. And that's Fighting With My Family, directed by Stephen Merchant with the amazing Florence Pugh.
You really want to choke her out in a lot of fingers?
Yeah.
Now pull it tight.
Now she's in trouble.
Oh, wait, I know you. You're from that weird family, aren't you?
We're not weird.
We don't like wrestling.
How do you know if you've ever been?
I've never had rectal bleeding before, but I'm pretty sure I'm not a fan of that.
How about I shove her head up your ass and then we can find out? Hello?
My name is Hutch Morgan. I'm calling from WWE. We'd like both of you to come try out for us.
WWE! It's all fake anyways.
Oh, what?
It's a wrestling movie. It's actually based on a real wrestler, Paige. Now, my wrestling knowledge is about as existent as my usual sporting knowledge. But because it's Pugh, it's Stephen Frost, it's even got The Rock showing up being just The Rock, as or Dwayne Johnson as The Rock. It's just this kind of great sporting, really solid movie. It's just a family, great family movie, a great Folly of Dreams movie. It's got kind of every beat that you would expect in a movie like this. But I don't know what it is about Florence Pugh, but she's amazing and can make anything feel different. And I'm glad she's about to take over the world after Black Widow. But yeah, it's just a really solid, you know, you'll be, again, getting very emotional at the end. It does all those things you want in that kind of movie. And it's just got some really, really great moments.
Yeah, yeah. I actually haven't seen that one, but I am very aware of it. And I definitely agree with you on Florence Pugh. She is an absolutely amazing actress. Mm. I remember for the House of Screams, we did an episode on Midsommar.
I missed that one. I have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, she's absolutely fantastic in Midsommar. We had a very nice, thorough discussion on that movie, and we were discussing the legitimacy of it actually being a comedy more than a horror movie, because I think it's a comedy. It's a very funny one. I know a lot of people would disagree. I've seen really heated disagreements on whether it's a comedy or not, but I think it's a comedy.
Yeah, I think the same could be slightly more argued, could be said about Hereditary, because I think Ari Aster has a wicked sense of humor. And I think you can see those both in there. And Midsommar's definitely like that. It is, some points of it are hilarious. And then an old man jumps off a cliff and I'm just like going, I'm still laughing. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. He's a sneaky director, and I cannot wait to see what he does next.
Absolutely, me either.
And with that, we put your hand, I guess, put your hand on the heart and get ready for our American anthem.
There's something you want badly. Are you sure you know what it is?
Just give me a chance.
It's never going to be great.
That's up to you, isn't it? Keep working. Make it better.
You got nothing! You had an opportunity and you blew it. You gave up!
What about you?
He thinks he let you down.
He hasn't let me down. It's just the opposite.
If you quit now, you'll just be a loser. First it's a scholarship, now it's this. What's next, me?
Now, you said your mother introduced you to this movie. What was your first reaction when you saw this?
Well, she was watching it, and I came in the room when she was watching it. This was years ago. I can't even remember. I must have been in my early teens when she was watching it, and you know, she was all captivated by it. I actually didn't end up watching the whole thing there, because I came in toward the end. Mm. I came in toward the part where we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
I came in at the part where Steve's father, Steve Tavario, played by Mitch Gaylord, walks in after his parents has had their upteenth fight. Mm. And they're what did you do? None of your business. You get the hell out of here. And they're shoving each other, and the little brother comes in, Steve, and he's like, get the fuck out of here. And yes. The kid runs off. And it's just like, it was just like, mommy, what is this? What is this madness? She's like, oh no, it's a good movie. And then like, I was just, it just captured me right there. And I was like, I have to see the rest of this. And I sat there and I watched the rest of the movie with her. And I was like, I have to see the whole thing of this, because this is glorious. I need to watch the whole thing. And then I did. And I'm like, yeah, it's exactly what I thought it would be. This is, you know, a fantastic movie. Even though it's weird. I guess we'll get into it, but it is a fairly weird movie, you know?
No, if you take any scene out of context, except for maybe the gymnastics, well, actually, except for the last chunk of the gymnastics, mm-hmm. you're looking at this kind of out of context scene, and all you can go is, what is this? Because it feels so disjointed in a way, but in the best kind of melodrama, because you're right, when you sort of get to that scene, when Mitch Gaylord drops the F-bomb, it comes as such a surprise, because this is not the movie that I thought would drop the F-bomb. I don't know. I thought it would, yeah. I went into it thinking, oh, it's going to be kind of like a, maybe when I sort of realized it wasn't going to be Jim Carter, because I thought, oh, gymnastics is going to be this. I'm like, oh, no, it's actually going to be him following his dreams and becoming Mitch Gaylord, rising to the best gymnast, which it isn't that either. So it defied all expectations. And each scene, I was just like going, huh, what? Oh, but you really get into this dopey little movie and the emotional core of it, which is these gymnasts who are just trying to compete. And I sort of came away with it going, yeah, gymnastics is really hard. And then you get all this other weird drama in it that makes no sense, but you just get yourself entangled in with, especially Janet Jones's character storyline, which has absolutely no stakes, but it's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, most definitely, most definitely. Yeah, like that's one of the things I like about it, you know, is just because it is essentially like a comparison, like it is the story and the plot is a standard 80s movie teen plot, like basically like I could think in comparison, like something like All the Right Moves and like Rad, you know, and in the hands of another director, it probably would have been just like that, you know, like a standard 80s teen movie. But it's directed by Albert Magnoli, who also directed the late great Prince's Purple Rain. So yes, it's essentially like at times, like it's a gymnastic movie, and at times it's basically one long music video. Like I thought Rocky IV had like all those hyper stylish montages, and this is almost, you know, in competition with that. Like, you know, saying like, how many hyper stylish montages can we put in this one? You know, like the movie opens with like Steve, Mitch Gaylord's character. He's working in like a shop, and he's welding almost like Flashdance style. And it's like, this looks like a fucking beer commercial, you know, like, you know, you got the sun, he's drenched in sun, and you know, you got fire in the background, he's all sweaty with his muscles, and he's grinding, you know. And then like you got Janet Jones' character, Julie, and she's coming in, and it looks like almost like a Double Mint gum commercial, like, you know, as she's flying in on the airplane. And this looks like you got these weird amalgamation of like two different like style, like music video commercial style filmmaking, and this is the opening of your movie. So it's like, oh, they're really setting the tone here.
Oh, they really are. And that tone keeps changing depending on which music video you're watching, which I kind of love about it, because when you sort of said, oh yes, he directed Purple Rain, I'm like, oh, of course he did, and this is why this movie looks this way, because I kept being struck by how this movie looked, which I was not expecting it to be this, well, stylish. Because you're right, it is montage after montage. It is, one minute you are in Flashdance because he's welding. He's like this working class kid who's dropped out of school, Mitch Gaylord. And of course, you've got Janet Jones, Julie, who's kind of the upper class gymnast who's moved to a new town to be coached by this amazing coach. And it's just this kind of weird thing. So every single time, it's almost like two movies kind of, or three movies, because the ending is completely its own thing. And then you've got these kind of two movies kind of pushed together with these two storylines, and they each have this own different style about them. And even when you get to Mitch Gaylord, when he's keeps practicing on the high bar, that or the parallel bar, depending where you are. And he's made it between two trees. It's this kind of, but it's almost turns into like this surreal dreamlike fantasy movie when he keeps trying to do this move. I'm assuming it's the invention of the Gaylord One. When he's trying to do that like massive triple flip dismount thing. You just kind of, it kind of really pulls you in, and most of it is the style. You're right. I can think of anyone else who directed this. If anyone who did not know how to direct Purple Rain, you would have just got this very stock standard. Okay, yep. And all the disparate kind of things wouldn't work as well, because you just be like, yeah, okay, it's Mitch Gaylord doing gymnastics, and Janet Jones is upset, or Julie's upset, because she can't use her own music in her floor routine. And it's just like, what else? But then you just get these really cool, amazing moments where you're just like, what is happening? This is amazing.
yeah, most definitely. Yeah, here's the thing. it's a movie that really shouldn't work because you know, you have this, you know, this contrast of styles going on, you know, and it's overly stylish. And I don't want to be mean here, but Mitch Gaylord is not a good actor. You know, I don't want to be negative on the guy, you know what I'm saying, because I am a fan of his, but he obviously was not an actor when he accepted this movie. You know, and it's very obvious in his line readings. He's incredibly stiff, you know. And I mean, he obviously wasn't hired for that. He was hired to do the gymnastics. But, you know, of course, that comes with delivering dialogue. And just like you have these just really stiff line readings, like like you mentioned the bar in the woods, which is fucking ludicrous.
Oh.
That he has that in the middle of the woods, and he's doing that at late at night in the pouring rain, and it's just like when he falls off it. Like, you ever seen the movie Hot Rod?
Yes, with, I have.
The scene where he's falling down, it kind of reminded me of, like, was this like the demo version of that? Were they inspired to do that scene where, like, he's falling down in the woods and, you know, he just keeps falling? Because it's like, it seems like that, and it made me laugh. But he decides to quit, and he goes to Julie's house, and she's like, "What are you doing here? I want to stay here tonight. I quit. I got nothing to prove." And it's just like, oh my God, it hurts. It hurts to hear him deliver these lines. But I gotta say though, the movie works and it delivers, even if, you know, a lot of the stakes are, you know what I'm saying, that it lands. Like, it's kind of unearned, if you will, which I'll get into, because there's, you know, I mean, it's obviously due to the climax, you know, that climax, you know, big gymnastic climax, you know, where they're at the competition and stuff. And it, you know, no pun intended, it really sticks the landing there, even though, like, everything that's led up to this point is unearned emotionally, you know?
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. And if the gymnastics wasn't good in it, I don't think this movie would work as well. Because they know that Mitch Gaylord is a fantastic gymnast, but he doesn't know how to express emotion in his face, which is like actually most people. I mean, the whole thing about being an actor is that you were taught to express emotion and to react. Most people don't necessarily know how to do that bodily. We just, in a way that you need on that shows on camera. And he's kind of got this dead-eyed look in his face, which I'm just like, oh, is that what normal people look like? Because no, he's not an actor, and it really, really hurts. I think he gets a lot better in the next movie we'll talk about. But
oh yeah.
At least with the showing of the emotion. but this one, he is absolutely dead, except when he is on that bar. That's when he really starts going for it. And then, because I'm assuming they use mostly him to do those moves and those dismounts, except when he crashes into the judges' table.
Yeah.
I don't know who poor guy had to do that stunt. But you're right. If that ending doesn't stick, if you don't really just enjoy watching gymnastics, which I do as well, like you, the Olympics, the gymnastics is always a highlight of it, just because you're watching these people doing these amazing things and you're just wondering how, I don't understand how they're able to achieve those flips. And it's all about precision, balance, and upper body strength, which are very hard combinations. As someone who has fallen off a bar, off the beam multiple times as a child, the beam is hard. And those women are doing crazy things on that thing.
Yeah.
So I think you need the gymnastics to stick. Otherwise, because, yeah, the emotional impact of this movie doesn't work. The fact that they try and have a relationship between Gaylord's character and Julie, it doesn't work. Though I kept forgetting they were dating, so every time it would go back to that, I'm like, oh yeah, those two are meant to be a thing. Why?
Right.
That does not work. So the emotional payoff has to be in the gymnastics, which this movie definitely achieves.
Yeah. The movie has a real problem with that. With the relationships, because I've always wondered if there's a longer cut of this movie that exists, because it primarily focuses on Steve and Julie, and mainly Steve, you know, with his problems at home with his father. His father is disappointed that he dropped out of school, you know, and he's like being incredibly hard on him, you know, and they got this real, just a really aggressive relationship. Like they're like, how many times do they fucking fight in this movie? It's just for no reason. Like, it's just like every time you see them together, like they're arguing, or like they're being pretty mean to each other. And when the movie starts off, Steve has a cast on because his father had broken his arm. They get into a fight and he grabs him by the arm. He's like, go ahead, break it again. You know, and the father was like, oh shit, you know what I'm saying? So it really focuses on Steve and like also Julie's character with her relationship with her cousin, the music producer who is crippled after he was in a car accident with his parents, and he lost both parents, and she doesn't really know how to really deal with him. Like, you know, she wants to be in his life, and she wants him in hers and all that stuff, you know, because, you know, they're family, but she doesn't. I guess it's awkward, you know, to consider in the situation that, you know, I guess he felt abandoned by the rest of the family after his parents died. And he's, you know, he's an eccentric character, you know.
Yeah, I actually quite liked him. And when he was in the movie, it took me a while to sort of click that he had, you know, he was actually, what had happened to him, the fact that he was impacted by the accident. Because it doesn't really show it, but he's just got this kind of good thing of like, yeah, when my parents died, you guys didn't know how to deal with me, so I just kind of went away. Which is kind of that real kind of little, one of the emotional real moments, because when someone has gone through a tragedy, it is hard for people to sort of go, oh, I want to say the right thing, but I don't know how, so I don't. And people just kind of feel like they're being ignored when they need support the most, because people just get very awkward around them. And that is kind of one of those moments in the movie that I kind of felt, oh, that was a real emotional moment, if that makes sense.
And it works better too, because Janet Jones and the actor who plays the cousin, whose name is escaping me at the moment, they actually work well off each other, you know. So you're kind of really a little bit more invested in their side of things more than Mitch Gaylor's side of things, because, you know, I mean, you do have John Aparia, who plays Mr. Tavery, Steve's dad, and you have Michelle Phillips, of course, playing his mom. And, you know, they're two great actors, but, you know, they have to play off of Mitch. And, you know, unfortunately, Mitch can't really convey the emotion properly, you know, to help sell the moments. So you just really have these, just, you know, these scenes where just like kind of go nowhere. Like, you understand what they're trying to portray here, but like, it really doesn't go anywhere.
No, but it doesn't.
My thing is that you have a bunch of other characters who are set up. Like, you have Steve's friend Kirk, and like, you know, we establish him early on as his friend, and he's trying to help him, and then he kind of disappears from the movie until, like, you know, we see him again at the qualifying matches for the competition in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And then Julie makes a new friend when she gets over there. Becky Cameron, played by Mira Ahns, and like, they set them up, they're going to be friends, and then they out of the blue have a falling out, and then like, she kind of disappears from the movie too, and like, you know, they kind of almost got this feud, and it's like, it feels really rushed, and it's like, that's why I'm like, is there a 2.5 hour version of this movie? Because I just don't want to believe that the script was written this way, you know, like they were just rushing through the mechanics of the plot, and it was, there had to have been scenes that were cut out of this that fleshes them out better, because you know, they're clearly established, you know, to be like the compatriots of these two, you know, lovebirds, and then they just disappear for whole sections of the movie, especially Kirk. Like, he only shows up twice, like, you know, like I said, for the qualifying match, and then at the big competition at the end, and it's like, and then he's a big part of the climax, so it's like, How are we supposed to be invested with him in this climax if we don't really spend any much time with him in the previous, you know, whole 2/3 of the movie beforehand, you know?
No, I absolutely agree with everything you said. And to be honest, I still would watch a 2.5 hour version of this movie, even with
almost definitely, Caleb's, most
definitely. Even with Caleb's acting. But you're right. Those two actors you mentioned, they feel, especially when you watch the climax, they feel like they've actually had their own story. They had their own storylines written as well. So they were meant to be the friend of the two main guys. But then when you're watching their kind of go through the, especially in the main competition, you feel like they're ending their own storylines, especially with so the actress you mentioned who's playing her friend, she's got her own kind of thing because they sort of butt heads because Jolie is all like, I don't want to be told what to do, which is a very strange attitude to have when you're doing gymnastics, when you are literally just told what to do. Like, you do not question your coach. She's questioning it. She wants to hear her own music. She wants to be kind of athletically free. And her friend just like, oh God, your attitude's dumb. You're meant to do what coach says. Coach knows best. All this kind of thing. And then all of a sudden she has her own kind of this weird, meant to be heartbreaking. Oh, she's hurt herself and she can't quite perform the way she's meant to. And just kind of, you're like, oh, I've missed something here. And the fact that Kurt is finishing his own kind of finish. It feels like he's finishing up his own storyline by doing so well in the meet and really kicking ass. You've got the sneaking suspicion of like, hang on, I've missed something. Did I miss a plot point? Did I miss a scene? Did I miss a few scenes that would actually set up these moments? And those, even though they're impressive to watch because I'm like, yeah, I'm watching cool gymnastics, at the same time, I'm like going, these are meant to be emotional payoffs, but I'm not responding to them at all.
Yeah. Especially with the character of Becky Cameron, because that knee injury comes out of nowhere.
Really does,
like,
like
they're butting heads, and then all of a sudden we get to the competition at the end, and she's got her knee wrapped up, and it's like, did I miss something? Like, when is this? But I, kudos to her, because even with like whether it was removed or they just didn't write it in, she. Give me a second. I'm getting emotional.
she
really sells that. Like, you know, even without the whole backstory about the knee or whatever, she really sells it. Like when she's doing her last floor routine, and, you know, this is it. She has no more. She has no more to give, but she's just going to finish it. Like, you know, it's almost like I mentioned Rocky IV Apollo, you know, she's gonna go out on her shield, you know. I'm not finishing this until I'm finished and it's over. And then, you know, and you can see the pain in her face, you know, and she's just, you know, I feel like if you did cut her stuff out, if she did have more stuff in it and you cut it out, it's a real disrespect to her because she really nails her last floor routine. And, you know, I was really invested in it. And I'm just like, that's why I had to brace myself, because I'm thinking about it. And I'm just like, the way she just portrayed that moment is just, it's wonderful. And it's just like, it's a real messed up situation because, you know, you have someone who's talented enough to pull a scene off like that. And you really gave them nothing to do it beforehand. So it's like, I really wish we could have seen like more to her, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like I just wish there was just more to it, because, you know, she's putting in really fine work here, and it's just like, you guys kind of let her down here.
Yeah, I kind of, because I do love the moment where she's kind of finished her floor routine, she's hands up in the air, and then once she knows that she can kind of collapse, she just kind of collapses on the floor and cries, because she's literally, you're right, she's given everything she could give. I just wish I kind of felt that more moment when the coach comes and picks her up. I wish I just felt something more than, oh, okay, because you're right, she is giving an amazing performance, even probably better performance than the lead, who I actually think is really good, but she's really kind of giving it everything, and to have that storyline completely gutted. And then to not kind of understand why the coach, other than, oh, she did her best, and then that coach coming in to pick her up should be a standing ovation moment, but they don't give her due, and it's kind of sad. I think this movie is kind of exploitation in the best way, because they're taking a property like Mitch Gaylord, who was an amazing athlete, probably still is, I mean, as you said, they invented flips after him, and the stuff that they are doing on that bar just feels ridiculous and dangerous. And they kind of rely, and I think the movie does rely too much on him acting, when they should have just realized, oh, we need to pull back and we need to make this an ensemble to make, to kind of let him just kind of be in, okay, yes, he's the lead, but we're going to be let him be in the background, which I kind of think Martino does really well in American Rickshaw. But this movie's like, nope, this is what people are going to come see. He's the name, so we're going to put him front and center, when he doesn't have the capability of, like when you mentioned his parents, they've got nothing to act off because he can't give them what they obviously need to be, especially when they're being emotional. It's such an emotional, meant to be such an emotional movie. And so I kind of wish, yeah, you're right. And as I said, I'd watch a 2.5 hour version of this if I got all the characters and all those beats, Kirk's story, the friend story, everything else. Or Becky's story. And so you could really just get that kind of textured ensemble gymnastics feel, which you get in the final act.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. Mm. It's just, yeah, I think they were just trying to sell, because, you know, Mitch Gaylord is obviously very handsome man.
Yes, he is.
Very, very, very good looking, you know, incredible physique, you know, incredible physical prowess, you know, and they were trying to sell that, you know, but I kind of feel like this is kind of like the excuse, the reason people look toward when they don't want to cast athletes in movies, like, you know, because we talk about that all the time, you know, on the action side of things, where it's like they hire the actor and they just train them to fight, and then sometimes they look unnatural in the fight scenes because obviously they don't really know how to fight, and it's obviously because they trust the actor to, you know, to deliver the performance, because, you know, you obviously have to deliver the dialogue, and I think this is probably one of the reasons they don't, because, you know, when you run the risk of hiring an athlete, you know, to play the role, like, you know, there are obviously, you know, exceptions, you know, because like Scott Atkins, who's an amazing athlete, but he's also a gifted actor.
Yes.
And like, so like, you do get lucky there, but like, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you get something like a Mitch Gaylord, who is not an actor, and, you know, maybe he had an acting coach, but they didn't have the time to, like, really run thorough training with him. You know you just end up with a real dull performance from him, and, you know, it's sad that they put him out there on Front Street like that. I'm pretty sure what seems to me, like, you know, I guess we'll get into it when we talk about American Rickshaw, that he probably looked back on that performance and decided to make the necessary adjustments, you know, regarding his performance in that particular movie. But like, yeah, like it's really, you know, sad that, you know, you put somebody out there like that, and, you know, they just, you know, they're supposed to be the ones that's selling the movie, and then they're all over the promotion, you know, saying they're the main focus, and then it's just like, you know, the poor guy ended up getting nominated for a Razzie Award for Worst New Star. Yeah, you know, the stuff like that sucks.
Though, to be fair, some amazing performances have also been nominated for Razzies.
That's true.
So every time I love a performance and I'm like, they were given a Razzie, I'm like, but really? That was actually a really good performance. What were they talking about? No, I think he was dropped in over his head. I think, yeah, they expected him to put the movie on his shoulders when they should have left that to other people. Because you're right. He does remind me of Jeff Speakman. Now, I think Jeff Speakman is a head and shoulders better actor. But you can tell he is a athlete first because of his, I can't remember the style, but it's a Korean version of martial arts. And he is amazing. Like, I've only ever seen the full of Perfect Weapon, but you do have this, like, almost 15-minute intro into him just doing that stuff in the living room. And you can tell, oh, no, this man is an athlete. And sometimes he's being a little bit outacted by everyone around him, but he kind of knows he had to step up and be learn how to act, like how to emote. So they do have a similar kind of presence in that moment, but I think you're right. I can understand why execs who are making movies or people who make movies are kind of looking at athletes going, oh, I want to put you on screen because your movement is perfect for what film needs. Unfortunately, you also need to be able to emote. which is why when you get the exceptions like Scott Adkins, who is an amazing athlete, who is incredible and is also a really great actor, like going back to Mike's show, Adkins Undisputed, listening to an interview of him when he saw himself, when Scott says, I knew I had to be an actor. I couldn't be an action star if I didn't know how to act properly. And I think he was referring to his time in EastEnders.
Yeah.
Where he was just looking back and going, oh, God, I was shite. Which he probably wasn't as bad as he thought, but he kind of wanted to push himself. Or you get the other side with Keanu Reeves, who is an actor, who's had some criticisms. I think he's an amazing thing, but he's a bit of a physical actor because he knows how to use his body much like an athlete. I mean, I just watched The Matrix like last week and just was going, holy crap, he's amazing in that movie. Yes, they had the best fight choreographers in that movie, but you kind of need... It's a hard job trying to be an action star or a physical actor, like what they were asking Mitch Gaylor to be. It's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, most definitely. Speakman, I think Speakman, going back to him, I think his performance works best in Perfect Weapon because they didn't really give him that much to do dramatically. They allowed him to play to his strengths, you know, because they really didn't ask much of him, you know, like, you know, he's stern a lot of the times and he's fine. That's why that performance is fine. You know, they're really asking a lot of Mitch in this movie to do, like, you know, he has to be, you know, emotional. He has to, you know, he has to be cool, calm, collected, you know, and like, yeah, he really obviously doesn't have the capabilities to pull that off, you know. So all you have left is just gymnastics. And it's like, are you going to have this man just flipping like every 90 seconds, you know, to Wawa's? And it's like, they asked way too much of him and he unfortunately wasn't up to the task.
No, it's actually a great example of showing how editing is so important in a movie, because if they'd edited this movie differently, if they had just kind of maybe cut out a little bit of the emotional scenes and just bulked up the movie with the surrounding characters, as we were talking about before,
right.
I think this would, you wouldn't, we wouldn't be talking about the, oof, the Gaylord performance is a little rough, because we wouldn't be noticing that as much. Yes, we would say, oh yeah, he's a little bit wooden, but he's fine. But he, you know, he's a gymnast and he's doing they're showing what he's good at, not what he's bad at. If you had those other elements, but because they've just stripped everything else away and all you get is you're watching him trying his best. Like his performance is shouting a lot, which, because they're trying to be big, they're trying to be emotional. They're trying to sort of run on those sort of was it Ice Castles, you know, Karate Kid. I think you mentioned another movie that was sort of very similar. Those kind of movies that were huge Rad. Those kind of movies that were absolutely huge in the 80s, because a sports movie really does tug at your heartstrings. And I mean, like Rocky IV, I mean, yes, that movie is full of montages, but Stallone and Dolph Lundgren are able to portray these very specific characters where you really want Rocky to get better with every single montage so he can beat Dolph Lundgren, because he is such this, I will break you, and you believe it. And even that movie knew that his English wasn't as good as it. He was still rough at English when he was still making Rocky IV, I assume. It was still just after he made, he couldn't, yeah. So they just had this massive monolith of the human being, and they knew how to use him, keep him silent, just make him with this physical presence. And then we'll worry about, and then we can let Stallone do the heavy lifting because he knows how to do that emotionally. So, there are ways of getting around it. I just think this movie was like, nope, everyone loves him. He's like the great gymnast. Everyone knows who he is. We'll make him front and center. That is how it's going to work. And then you watch it and go, I mean, look at these other people who I obviously want to get to know, but you're not letting me.
yeah, most definitely. I just wished we would have had some time to, you know, with other characters. Like going back to the climax, we are introduced to a new character, the little girl Tracy Prescott, who's like the real star of the show, and she's wowing everybody. And like, who's she?
Where did she come from?
I don't know her.
And also they introduced Lee Yoon-ji, who was also a gold medalist, Chinese gymnast out of nowhere. And that scene where he sort of gives final approval, I think it's to Mitch Gaylord and Kurt. And I'm just like going, but we haven't met him. Yes, I can tell you are an amazing gymnast just by watching you. But where did you come from?
Right. And there's this ultimate competition between him and Kirk. And it's where did this come from? They have this rivalry and it's just immediately created for the climax. And it's like, am I supposed to be invested in this? You know, where did this come from? You know,
it almost feels like this movie was specifically made for gymnastic super fans, that they would know instantly as, oh, I know him. He's that gold medalist. Okay, now I get the rivalry. I'm like, what? I know we're kind of criticizing this movie a lot, but I still think it's actually worth the watch just for the gymnastics.
I mean, it's fine. It's a fine movie. I greatly enjoy the movie. Yeah. It's just like, these are just, you know, issues that we have, and I don't think it takes away from the whole thing. Like, you know, it's there's a lot to admire about it. I like the fact that it's not your typical, it's a typical 80s teen sports story, but yes. it's handled in the most untypical way, you know, where it's like, you hire this director who looked at the material and is like, yeah, I'm not going to do it this way. I'm going to really stand out here, you know, because I'm thinking of like I'm going back to the climax once again, and the way everything is lit, like, you know, when you watch a gymnastics competition and everything is so brightly lit so you can see everybody, but like, there's like orange and purple lights everywhere, and like they put spotlights on the gymnasts doing their routine so we could see them, and it's like, that's not how you do it, but it looks great, you know.
No, and also I love the fact that it highlighted that everything is happening at the same time. It doesn't necessarily play with time exactly. But you do get the sense that, oh, yes, because in a gymnastic competition, you have different age groups, different kind of subsections. And so if you are interested in the male ring, you would sit next to where the male rings were, and that's where you would get your thing. Or if you're interested in the vault, you'd sit on the other side. And I love how it kind of shows that of all the stuff sort of happening, but you know that you just need to focus on the thing that Albert is showing you. And it's just really so cool. And the way I was kind of struck by how it was lit. And it's kind of got all these oranges and purples and these kind of clashing colors all around them. And the music is really cool in 80s. And it just kind of feels so full of life that it's kind of, I wish the rest of the movie was like that final sequence. I really do. Because you finish this movie and you walk out going, oh, yeah, that was actually, I really, really enjoyed that. Even though you'd think back and go, well, okay, this wasn't right. I wish they'd done this. I wish it was actually longer so they could flesh out all these things. But that final sequence is so great. And it's like almost 30 minutes. Like, it's a big chunk of the movie, which is great. I'm not complaining about that at all. Give me more gymnastics, please. But you're just watching this and you're watching these amazing routines. Where either the actors had to learn how to like prop them up on parallel bars or do these ring kind of things. And it's kind of, except for maybe some of the dismounts, it's the actual actors doing it. And I'm just like going, holy, because gymnastics is hard. I mean, you can see it on their face. I'm like, I'm having to hold myself up both my two arms. It's just that. And you can kind of see it. And it's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. What I wanted to mention too was another thing that they do that works is they hired Alan Silvestri to do the score.
He has such the most amazing career. Every time I see his name, I'm like, oh shit, it's Alan Silvestri.
Yeah, he's absolutely like my favorite composer in movies. His legendary Back to the Future score is his score for Predator.
Yes.
And a lot of the score for this sounds like some cues, leftover cues from Back to the Future, particularly in the most hilarious scene in the movie, and because of just how fucking ludicrous it is when, of course, I mentioned a scene where because Steve has a little brother named Mikey, who's
a
little dirt biker, you know, like the literally the opening scene is him building like a three-wheel like dirt bike and stuff. So when he tells little Mikey to get the fuck out of here, as he's shoving, you know, he's shoving his the father again, Mikey takes off on his dirt bike, and Steve takes off after them, and they have this high speed chase through the woods. Which is ludicrous. Like, he's in a high speed chase with his little brother, and like, I like how before he gets on his dirt bike, because he had like on a raincoat, because this was the night before he was doing his practicing in the woods in the rain. So he has on a raincoat, so he goes back to get his dirt bike to chase after Mikey, and he throws off his raincoat. But then the next time we see him, he has like on his cool leather jacket, and it's like, you went to pull on your fucking leather jacket before you chase after your brother, you know? And it's ludicrous. And then like they're really like, you know, it's a real high speed chase, and then you got this like searing music from Alan Silvestri, where it's just like, you know, oh, this is really serious now, because, you know, and like, you know, you got these like overhead shots, like cutting to like overhead shots of like B-roll footage of the mountains and stuff. And then Mikey just decides to, like, because Steve tries to cut him off with his dirt bike and misses, and then just completely barrel rolls, and Mikey decides to leap off his dirt bike and send his dirt bike flying off the mountain. like yes. it's extraordinarily ridiculous. And then like the kid is hanging, Steve, help me. and like he helps him back up, and then you have Mitch, you know, being emotional, and it's obviously they probably do some Visine in his eyes. He's like, I'm sorry, Mikey. It's like, you shouldn't have told Dad to leave. And it's like, all this because he told you to told Pop to leave, and he told you to get the fuck out of here. Like, you almost killed yourself, kid. Like, what the hell?
Especially when the dad is vaguely, well, not vaguely, he broke his son's arm. So he is an abusive man. I mean, this is not an easy man to live with. And yeah, it's just, you're right. I mean, this movie is, oh, I love it, because Albert Magnoli, and with the Silvestri score, this movie is far more dramatic than it actually is. Because when you actually look at the stakes of the movie, they're not that high. This is, I think the main competition is the chance to go to Phoenix for the American champs. And then out of that, they get to go to the world champs. Now, the world champs isn't absolutely, I'm not diminishing the world champs at all, because it's a freaking amazing competition. But I love how the fact that they didn't even mention the Olympics. And you think this is a movie that would go, okay, no, these kids are going to be trying to go to the Olympics. But it's not. It's a trial to get to another trial, which, to be fair, is the life of a gymnast. You're constantly just going to meet, seeing who the best points to see if you could get to the next meet, to the next meet, to the next meet. But it's just hilarious. I love how the stakes are relatively low. But because the movie is so overly dramatic of, you know, like little brothers falling off cliffs and things like that, it is the most dramatic movie you will ever watch. I kind of love that. It's just, it's all about the tone and how he's shooting it. Cause you're right. It's a beautiful movie. It's so glossy and so beautiful. And then when you realize what the sort of the stakes are compared to the drama, you're like, huh.
Right. But I think this is why you and me both agree that why the climax is so important. And
yes,
it works despite, you know, the rest of the movie, because, you know, the stakes are really low. But it really sells, you know, the fact that, you know, it really sells more than it should, you know, because, you know, it's such a fantastic ending, and it's almost unearned. And like, even when like he's doing the, what was it, the Triffis?
Yes.
Which is like, you know, he attempted to do it earlier, which is they call the most difficult dismount move in gymnastics history, and he doesn't get it. And like, yeah, the music is really over the top there, and like the coach is like, no, and like, because he knows he's not going to pull it off.
Yeah.
But like when he does pull it off, it does grab me. I have to admit, like, because, you know, the father finally shows up, and he's there, you know, to see his son. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go support my kid. And you know, he's up there, and he's just going around and around on the pole, like, you know, and it's just, and you know, the great Michael Pataki, who plays the coach,
yes,
in the movie, like, you know, he's standing up, and like he sees it, yes, like he's gonna do it, and that moment really works. Despite, not to cut you off, but despite itself, like, it really works, because, you know, like, we've been talking shit about Mitch as an actor, but like, yeah, he is just a phenomenal gymnast, and you know, that's where he really shines the brightest. And the way he like pulls that off, and like you could tell he pulls it off, like, you know, there's certain parts in the routines where you could see that when they land, they don't land perfectly. But like they'll cut away, right, you know, to see like, oh yeah, they landed perfectly, but you could see like, you know, they were a little faulty on the landing and it would just cut right,
yes,
like right at that moment to like, oh yeah, like, you know, they made it. And like, no, he nails it.
Oh yeah,
completely. Like, he just fucking nailed, like, boom, right there. And it's such a, you know, a really great moment in the movie, and I love it.
No, it's because in gymnastics it's all about your landing. If your landing has to always be perfect, which is why gymnasts always have horrible backs, because they are having to land in a certain way. And it's all about the dismount. But no, you're right. I think one of the climaxes I think is earned is definitely that dismount. I think because you have him practicing in the woods, and I think just watching him work as a gymnast is the most exciting and thing. And so when you do get, and the fact that when he doesn't do the dismount properly, he lands into the coach's table, I'm just like, oh my God, what poor stuntman had to like crash into that.
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah. I mean,
that is, I'm sorry.
No, it's just, you go.
No, I would say like, yeah, that is a very dangerous thing to pull off, you know, because you're basically asking a gymnast to eat shit, you know?
Yes.
And you know, that stuntman is braver than the rest of us, because, you know, you could really injure yourself doing something like that. Obviously, you know, they probably took all the necessary precautions to make sure they were safe, but you're still asking a gymnast to eat shit, basically fall head first toward the floor.
Yes.
So it is a crazy, crazy stunt.
Oh, it is. And I think what this movie does really well, especially with that lead up to the climax of the dismount, is it actually shows how dangerous this is. This is something you have to train years for. And you have to know how to do every move perfectly. And you're right, because I love how they cut away from all the dismounts and like, nope, they did it perfectly. And you're like, sure. And then you watch him, you're like, oh no, he's doing it perfectly and probably almost doing it perfectly a lot for each different take. And it really gets that sense of, oh, this is dangerous, especially when he's practicing in the woods and keeps falling down. Yes, it's in the rain, which is very dangerous. But it's there's this kind of amazing moment. So when he does pull off that dismount, it's so worth it. And it so plays so well, because I think that is, that is definitely earned. That is one thing they really earn in this movie so well, right, is that dismount, that you're like, yes, he did it. Yes.
Right. I also like how, you know, it would have been very easy, you know, because of course he scores the perfect 10 for that. And it would have been very easy to have him be like the winner and all that stuff. But yeah. I like how he scores a perfect 10 to end up in third place.
Mm.
Like the spotter goes 9.75, and he goes, for what? For third place. Anything higher won't matter. And I like that they set that up, that, you know, because, you know, he is the main character, so it would have been easy just like, yeah, he wins, like, you know, screw who got the higher score before him, like, you know, he's the winner. And it's like, no, he just gets in third place, even though he pulls off what the commentators say, the most amazing and most difficult dismount in gymnastics history.
Yes.
But I like that. But it, you know, it's fine, because it really doesn't matter. You know, it's which is why I'm a sucker for stories like this. It's about not necessarily achieving something in life, like, you know, as a status, but, you know, achieving something within yourself and becoming content with yourself. This was something he loved, and he fell out of love with it. And, you know, he's basically finding himself in the moment again and doing something he loves. And like, you know, when he has that euphoric moment when he lands it, and it's just like, yeah, this is what I've been missing, you know? This is, you know, that's what he was there to earn, you know, not necessarily earn, like, you know, the big gold medal championship or whatever, but, you know, to reaffirm his spot, you know, and his love for this sport, you know. And I just love stories like that. And that's why this movie sticks out to me so much, you know.
No, I think you're right. I love the fact that he doesn't win. I love the fact that he's kind of shaky at the beginning of the meet. Like, he's not performing as well as everyone else, but he just does this one thing right. And that thing is, of course, the hardest dismount you could do. But it's just that one thing he was working toward. And you're right. That is the one thing that makes it. And that is kind of the thing that you take away with you. And you are happy that he did it. It's like Rocky not winning the fight in the first movie. But he wins because he was able to do it. And he was able to sort of find something in himself.
Yes.
Where he was able to stand up to Apollo Creed. And this is that kind of that same moment. He doesn't win the competition, but he wins that moment. And you're right. And you were just elated when you walk out of the theater, and then I go ring my dad, and then we have a conversation about his time, about drinking too much when he was competing, and it's great. So yeah, is there anything else you want to say about the American anthem before we head into some more glorious lunacy?
Oh, yeah. I just want to say I did create a drinking game from American Anthem. not just a drinking game, but it's something I do in my everyday life. I do it with my ex-girlfriend, Diane, who I'm still very great friends with.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And during the climax, you know, where they're competing, of course, Steve and Kirk are sitting side by side with each other, you know, as they go through the competition. And it's like, everything they do, like one of them gets right, they always give each other like you know, the bro pound, or you know, the predator handshake. Yes. You know, deal it, you said. And you know, they do this constantly.
Oh yes.
And I, when I initially showed this to Diane like years ago, I made a joke. I was like, hey, look, Diane, you see why they're doing that? It's because they're bros. So every time they did it, it was like, look, Diane, see, they're bros. look, they're bros. So the drinking game I created was you have to take a shot every time they do that, and then you do the same. Like you, obviously, you have to do it with somebody else.
Yes.
Y'all both take a shot, and then you do the bro shake and scream out, because we're bros!
Because we're bros! No, my favorite bit, yeah, it's not quite the bro moment, but it's the smile that Lee Yu-Gee gives Kurt and Mitch Gaylor when they do something well. Because he's meant to be the super gymnast, which he actually was. But just to give this little thumbs up, not a thumbs up, I imagine him giving a little thumbs up, which would have been adorable, but just this little smile and nod of like, yeah, you did good! It's adorable.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I wish we'd have seen more of him in the movies instead of the climax. But it's great.
Yeah, he is great, and it is definitely worth a watch. Wouldn't acting at all, just for some of those amazingly beautiful shot moments, over dramaticness, and just watching the gymnastics at work. It's a special movie, and thank you so much for introducing me to it.
No problem. I'm glad you dug it. You know, I love it a lot. And I'm really glad to hear that you dug it. I'm always happy to hear when somebody says, "Oh, I love American Anthem," because now I can share my love with somebody else for the movie. You know, because I really don't know many people who have seen it.
I was so surprised to find it on Apple iTunes. I was just like, really? Oh, sweet. Also, Jim Carter is as well, which I only found out last night. So I was just like going, yes, I can watch Jim Carter as much as I want. and with that, we are going to be going into becoming one of my absolutely favorite directors, actually. Now, heading into a movie that is from a director who's quickly becoming one of my favorites, and the insanity will ensue. We're going to go into American Rickshaw. What would your first trailer be for American Rickshaw?
Of course, I have to go with his previous film, the highly underrated but incredibly great Hands of Steel.
Yes.
Stop! What the hell are you doing?
I'm the result of Project HOS-1. Die! 70% of my body has been bionically reconstructed.
Hands of Steel is an amazing movie. It's basically the Terminator meets Mad Max meets Over the Top.
Yeah.
It is the most glorious thing ever. It stars one of the actors in this movie Daniel Green, who plays the title character in there, where he's basically a cyborg who arm wrestles people in a post-apocalyptic future. And it is an incredible movie, and I wish more people talked about it. I mean, there's people who talk about it, but I wish there was more people who talked about it, because it's great. Like, it's basically an amalgamation of everything we loved about the 80s. You know, like, you had post-apocalyptic movies, you had cyborg movies, and then you had arm wrestling. So it's like, you bring all those together, you just get an incredible package of a movie.
I know. And what is more 80s than arm wrestling? I mean, to be honest. And this movie has John Saxon. I mean, come on.
Oh, yes.
No, this is a glorious movie. And I kind of wish it is, because I think there's, Sergio Martino is kind of one of the great Italian directors that I think gets lauded, which he should, because he's a great director. But there are certain ones that aren't his horror giallo movies that I think should be talked about more often, including Hands of Steel and including American Rickshaw, which is kind of horror-esque. I don't know. It's a weird movie. We'll get into it. But no, this is going to be a great trailer, and it's a movie that people should definitely know about.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, for my first movie, again, I'm changing my mind, because I also wanted to go an Italian trailer, and also one that was set in the States. Filmed in Italy. No, this one was actually, I think, filmed in... Actually, no, wait. You know what? I think this was actually filmed in Miami. But I'm going to go for Umberto Lenzi this time. I'm going Nightmare Beach. Again, John Saxon.
Welcome to Spring Break, the annual migration of the idiot.
Biker parking only. Get a grip.
Chill out. Look, we don't want any trouble, all right?
The music is amazing. You've got it's definitely a slasher movie, a motorcycle helmeted killer in black leather going around killing people in the most interesting ways during a spring break in a small Florida town. It's incredible. It's pulsing. I think Umberto Lenzi tried to take his name off it. I think it's added back on now. Yes. How much he directed of it is probably could be disputed, because I think he was not well and I think he wasn't feeling it. But I love Lenzi. I love this movie, and it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That I actually saw that for the first time last year. That was one of the last two movies I bought before we went into quarantine.
Lockdown. Yeah.
It was Nightmare Beach and The Initiation. And I did a double feature on that. I still haven't watched Initiation. It's still in the wrapper. but I did watch Nightmare Beach, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Of course, how could you not? It has John Saxon in it. But it was a fun movie. Yeah. Lenzi, he was not well, so he was removed from it. And I guess he didn't like how the film turned out, so he had his name removed from it. And they still trying to credit him with it. And it was like, yeah, it could be disputed just how much he actually directed of it. But it's a damn fine movie. I really enjoyed it. You know, the killer looks cool. You know, it's got a great setting. And yeah, it's a damn fine movie.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's just got that great Italian score to it. It's just a really fun movie, and yeah, I think he's got his name back on it, because we are in an age now where certain Italian directors will sell a Blu-ray than an unknown, and Umberto Lenzi is definitely one of those names that gets attention. But it is a really fun movie. Okay, so what would your second trailer be for American Rickshaw?
Of course, keeping with Sergio Martino, I'm going to go with 1973's Torso.
Torso. It saturates the screen with terror.
I've called you here today for a good reason. What do you have here? Fragments of cloth.
Is one of these students a psychosexual killer?
Barbarously murdered just 1 week ago.
Or are they just playing erotic games? Not so innocent erotic games.
Mm-hmm.
Nasty Little Giallo.
So good.
Yeah. I saw this maybe probably 2 years back for the first time. I had watched a review of it by Brandon Tenold, who's a YouTuber who reviews like all these kinds of movies. And I was like, yeah, I got to see this one. And I watched it and I was like, oh, yeah. Most definitely, this is my thing. It was, I liked it a lot better than I did... which was surprising to me because everybody told me I was going to like this one was Pieces.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Pieces is great. You're going to love it. And I watched it. And I'm like, the fuck is this bullshit? I didn't hate it, but I was like, yeah, this movie is like this movie is just wild and for no reason. Yeah. Torso was a lot better. I really enjoyed Torso.
No, Torso is a much better directed movie than Pieces. Sergio Martino is just a stronger director than, I can't remember the guy who directed Pieces, even though I find Pieces fun, but it's kind of bordering on that ironic way, which I don't like to watch movies, but when you have a guy hiding a chainsaw behind his back and getting into an elevator, I'm like, okay movie. okay, sure, why not. I enjoy Pieces for the ludicrousness, but it's just, I mean, okay, it's got a guy coming in going, hello, this is my kung fu professor. It's just like, what are you doing? Right. So I think, yeah, there's a borderline ironic way which I watch Pieces, which I don't necessarily like to do, but sometimes it happens.
The fuck is that ending? that everybody was telling me, like, oh, that ending, it's great. And it's like, but it doesn't make sense. Like, nope. She would, like, she's like a Frankenstein body. She was never alive. How the hell did... You know what? Never mind. No, never fucking mind.
It's just for that kid to have the O face. It's really just...
Right. And it immediately fades to black right after that. Like, right on the shot of him just like, ah! And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me?
No, I get that reaction to Pieces because you're either just going to go, right, I'm going to watch some ludicrousness and a movie that is literally made from pieces. that make no sense together, or I'm just going to go, this is nonsense I can't quite deal with. And I get both sides completely because Pieces is that kind of movie. But Torso is a magnificent little dirty little movie, and it is much more streamlined. Sergio Martino is not a madman who think he can just chop up a whole bunch of weird things and put it in a movie. And it's very creepy. Like the doll, it's got, cause he leaves dolls everywhere, doesn't he? Or am I thinking of another? Yeah. And the mask is creepy and it's sleazy. And then that final act is so tense. I mean, it is just so well done.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So, if you haven't seen Torso, please do, because it is actually one of the great giallo slash, more even goes into really slasher territory, but it is absolutely fantastic. My final trainer is going to be the most basic thing ever, but I don't know how you have American Rickshaw and not show the trailer to Big Trouble in Little China.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
It's a pretty amazing planet we live on here, and a man would have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe.
There is a hidden world where ancient evil weaves a modern mystery.
What's going on here? Is this some kind of...
magic. The darkest magic.
They call it Little China.
Finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
The great John Carpenter, because I was not expecting a Big Trouble Little China ripoff when I went into this movie at all. I went in completely blind. So I think this trailer, with all its gloriousness, is just, you're going to have it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, it's Big Trouble Little China.
Yeah.
It's one of my all-time favorites. It is an absolute classic. Of course, it's got the great Kurt Russell in there, and Victor Wong and James Hong. And it's just, how could you not? And yeah, it's directed and scored by John Carpenter. How could you not love it? You know, it's not. I mean, I've thought about doing an episode on Big Trouble in Little China, but it's like, what do I really say about a masterpiece? You know, how do I do that movie justice? You know.
Yeah, it's kind of, all you can say is, like, of course people didn't get this at the time. They didn't realize what he was doing, but at the same time, it's this masterpiece of everything that's happening. And it's got one of those absolutely great cast. I mean, it's also got Dennis Dunn, who I love, in every time he pops up, I'm so happy to see him. And it's just got one of those casts where you're just, I mean, Carter Wong, for God's sake. I mean, this is kind of one of those amazing movies that, yeah, is held up as a masterpiece because it is. And yeah, there's nothing really you can say about going, yeah, everything about this movie is great.
Yeah, most definitely. Everything in that movie just works incredibly.
Yes, it's absolutely brilliant. And with that, we're going to be getting in to American Rickshaw from 1989, directed by the great Sergio Martino.
Hey, babe, ride with me, give you a discount.
I'll carry you my arms if you prefer.
Hey, Tiger.
Don't you rickshaw guys work for tips? Is $100 enough?
Never trust a whore.
Can't you forget who's holding the aces here, pal? I'm in deep shit, Daniel.
Somebody got there before me.
So, but it's all very suspicious.
Ah, shut up!
I kill for a lot less.
Now, this was my first watch. I hadn't really come across it, and my life has been important that I've seen it. When did you first see this movie?
It was actually last year. What happened was that I had saw a listing for it because it was released for the first time on Blu-ray. I think it was the first time ever released on disc too.
Yeah.
Last year by Cauldron Films, Cauldron Distribution, and I noticed it, and I was really taken back by the artwork on it. It looked amazing, and But I wasn't too sure of it. But I have a friend named Michelle Kisner who, like, she's an incredible critic and a great person who she bought the Blu-ray and she reviewed it. Like, she what she does is when she posts on Facebook when she watches the movie, like, she'll post that she's watching it and then leave her thoughts in the comments, you know, so we all could respond. And like the comments she was leaving, you know, every single one of them was, you know, by the time she left the last one, I was like, I have to get this one. I have to get this one, because if she's just blown away by it, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be too, because me and her kind of have the same kind of taste.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky I did, because by the time I jumped on it, I think they were I think I ordered it from Diabolik DVD, and there was only like two left in stock, and I got the other one. So I really was, like, you know, got lucky there, you know, because I was for the first print, because, you know, with the first print you get they have this gorgeous slip cover to it, you know, and you know, I'm a collector, so, you know, I love getting the, especially, like, you know, for Vinegar Syndrome, who releases all the beautiful slip covers to their
Yes, yeah.
So
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so I got it in and I watched it, and I don't think I was even halfway done with it before I was like, I'm in love with this movie. I really am. Like, it is strangely captivating, as it is batshit insane. It is really, like, I remember telling you when we were talking about this, like, when you were talking about when you watched it, I'm like, it's fucking wild, isn't it? You
know? Oh my God. It's insane. Like, I got this off eBay and it didn't have the slip cover, anything like that. And I think I was lucky to get it. I think I got it. Ordered it way back when you first suggested this double, because I'm like, what's American Rickshaw? Didn't even know. I don't think I realized it was Sergio Martino until I finally watched it. And yeah, this movie is insane. It's got that thing where most giallos is that I kind of lose track of the plot. Like, even talking about this now, I'm going to be like, okay, so was this what was happening? Because I was just rewriting my notes last night and then I realized, oh shit, I'm losing plot points. But images are sticking in my mind, and when you're watching it, you're just like going, what is Donald Pleasance doing? Wait, she's a witch. How are the fires starting? And it's just this amazing that it's kind of, when we're talking about how they kept putting Mitch Gaylord front and center, expecting him to do all the heavy lifting, this movie, Martino, even though I think this is a much better performance, knows that the insanity is going to carry this movie and not Mitch Gaylord.
Right. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Like, yeah. It's hard to even describe what this movie is.
Oh, because my God. Yeah.
There's Satanism. There's Chinese witchery, like black magic. There's little skeevy like porn thing going on, you know, the stripper.
Yeah.
It is just all weird. And then, of course, in the middle is Mitch Gaylord, it's Scott Edwards, someone who's helping his buddy around it, like the little rickshaw company on like on Miami Beach or whatever, you know, saying because his friend has broken his leg.
Yes.
So like, you know, he's a college student who's helping his buddy in his, you know, rickshaw, like, you know, doing his shifts at the rickshaw. And it's just like none of this stuff should work as well as it do, because this is all just like everything thrown into the blender. But it absolutely works, and it's so enthralling. It's just, I can't believe what I'm watching, but I cannot look away, you know?
It's one of those magic gifts of a movie, because you're just watching it and you're just like, wait, what? Huh? And all of a sudden you just enthrall in this madness of a movie. And yeah, as I said, I don't sort of remember specific plot points. And so I don't remember the order of things so much. So I will be asking questions of like, did this happen or what was going on? But all you sort of need to focus on is this, and it's Sergio Martino. So it's got these amazing kind of imagery, especially the opening scene where we meet Mitch Gaylord with his rickshaw. Yeah. And it's raining. Very... That gorgeous, gorgeous shot. And he picks up this elderly Chinese lady played by Michi Kobe with her cat. Oh, God, that cat. And they go off together, and he kind of, I'm guessing, takes her home. And it's just this kind of amazing opening scene where you have no idea, no context to what is actually happening. And then the movie starts unfolding, and it gets, the more mystical and magical it gets, the more I was like, am I watching a Big Trouble in Little China ripoff? Because this feels, oh my God, this is what this movie is. So you get this kind of you get a couple of amazing genres all thrown in at once, and I just had the biggest grin on my face, because what it was doing with that premise was so wild. And what happens to Donald Pleasance, I'm jumping around all over the place, at the end is magical.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The minute he starts squealing like a pig is just magic, absolute magic.
Oh. You know?
And it's funny too, because he plays it fairly straight, and you could tell this was a paycheck for Donald Pleasance. There's a lot of moments where you could tell he really doesn't give a shit. Like after he's on TV and, you know, he delivers his little sermon, because he plays like a evangelist.
Yes, yeah.
And he's saying goodbye to his wife, and it's so like, goodbye, wife. I don't, like, you can see Donald Pleasance like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Do you have my check ready? Like, I'm ready to go.
You can almost see him holding his check going, where's the exit in that moment? But he's going to throw that special Donald Pleasantness in there. Like, he can't help himself because he's Donald Pleasance. But yeah, you can kind of tell it's toward the end of his life.
He still takes it mostly seriously. He still has that scene where he pulls that fucking kabuki makeup on his face with the wig, and where he's raping the witch, you know what I'm saying, when she was younger.
Yes.
And it's just like, you know, like, obviously, like, he still made an effort, because, you know what I'm saying, like, it's just wild to see Donald Pleasance in this wig and that makeup and shit, just being like a creepo, you know.
Yeah. It's absolutely wild, because this movie starts off pretty insane. I mean, you get this amazing, gorgeous shot, and then because it's Sergio Martino, it gets pretty skeezy pretty quickly. I mean, I love him, but he always will kind of permeate the movie with this kind of always feels like unwholesome sex, like whatever he's doing, and with a crying cat. Because if you've ever seen Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key, that is another movie that feels unholy, especially with the sex going on, and a screaming cat all the way through. And that cat is lets you know what's going on. But it's just, so you start off with this kind of skeeziness, because Mitch Gaylord is taking over his friend's rickshaw kind of thing and just running around. Actually, before we get on, before noted, I like the fact that his next movie wasn't athletic at all. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to be doing gymkhana, or he's not a gymnast. He's just a kid who's in the wrong place at the wrong time, and finding himself being filmed while having sex with a sex worker, who may or may not be being blackmailed. I was not 100% sure on that point, but it's kind of cool that he went to Italy, got a role that did not involve any of his strengths, and felt like maybe he was pushing himself a little.
Yeah, I think like we were saying during American Anthem, I think he watched that and decided he wanted to take acting more seriously. Mm. So it made sense that the next role he did wasn't something that involved gymnastics and stuff, because he probably really wanted to take himself seriously as an actor. You know, maybe I could make a career out of this. You know, doing acting, because I still won't say like he's good, but he's a lot more natural. He gives a very decent performance. Mm. Like there's no stiffness to him. Like, you know, the line readings are a lot more natural and all that stuff. Like he's very more like capable of delivering, like, you know, the emotions, like anger, especially the scene where he gets with the sex worker, and he busts the fact that they're taping him.
Yes.
And, you know, he gets into this fight scene and he's angry, and he's really fairly believable.
Yeah.
You know, he fairly pulls it off. And I was, you know, really impressed by, like, you know, the adjustments he made to his acting, because I really did like him a lot better in this one, because he was really, really decent.
He was, you're right. He's a little bit more believable. Like, when he gets angry, he's not just shouting. Like, he actually, especially in that scene when he busts the guy filming him when he's about to have sex, it feels like a believable, indignant anger, which you would feel in that moment if you did not realize you were being videotaped. Mm-hmm. He's got a sense of urgency to his performance, because he's found himself in this kind of conspiracy, multi-connected conspiracy that he doesn't understand. So he's just trying to figure out why people are trying to kill him and everyone around him. So he does really portray that sense, I need to figure this out. This is a sense of urgency. But at the same time, a lot more of the talky performances are given to other people.
Yes.
So, like, his roommate, Judy Clayton, who I'm pretty sure plays the, dubbing her the sex worker, but she's the sort of the love interest.
No, that was the Judy Clayton was the wife of Donald Pleasant's character, Victoria Proudy.
Oh, shit, yes, sorry, was, I had my notes,
Victoria Proudy or Proudy plays Joanna, who's the love interest.
Yes,
Which is a weird relationship they have, you know, because, you know, obviously it starts out, you know, crazy, their relationship, but they basically, and, you know, she kind of keeps backstabbing him, but they end up falling in love anyway. I love that scene where he takes her, he kidnaps her, and they go to the hotel, and she's, you know, she just decides to be seductive toward him, and she gets naked and goes in the shower, and he follows her in there. Even though he was like trying to threatening to stab her with a hypodermic needle he found in the garbage. And
I'm assuming you've heard of AIDS, which is
and then like he just gets in the shower with her, and it's like, oh, I thought you hated me. I do. But yet they proceed to have sex anyway.
yes, they do. This is a very complicated relationship. And as soon as that happens, she's backstabbing him again by sort of saying, oh, no, he's the one that killed. Because the whole thing is kind of like a wrong man situation. He's filmed about to have sex. He finds out, he beats up the guy who, this is a very convoluted plot, who happens to be the son of Donald Pleasance.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to grab a tape so no one will see it, but it ends up being the wrong tape, I think. And then all of a sudden he has a hitman coming after him and then framing him. It's kind of like, this is an ultimate movie of putting a hat on a hat on a hat. And then you even have, with all this going on, then you have the fantasy elements on top of that. So it's just kind of one thing after another, but it's so glorious every single time you get to realize, oh, okay, shit, this is happening. Oh, wait. Oh, Okay, so they frame him. So it could have just been a wrong man story without it, but then you just get the added bonus of, wait, is Donald Pleasance the devil? Ooh, awesome! it doesn't need it at all, but it's better that it does.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, most definitely. What I love about it most is that Martino is great in the fact that, because you know this movie is so wild and it's so complicated and convoluted, the plot, and he slickly gives you moments where it's like you're gonna have it explained to you, like he gets a letter early on. He gets a letter delivered to him in the mail, mm-hmm. and it's from Michikubi, mm-hmm. old Madam Luna. And he starts reading it, and then his neighbor, like the Latina woman who's in love with him,
yes.
she knocks it out of his hand and it falls down, and he never goes back to pick it up until later. And then when he does, he decides to read it again and then drops it and then never goes back for it. So we never know what the letter says.
Yes.
And then when he does steal the tape, it, like you said, it's the wrong tape. And it seems like it's a confession from a Donald Pleasant's son character who's missing a thumb for some reason. I like that they didn't explain that why he's missing a thumb. He's just missing a thumb.
Yeah.
And you can't hear what he's saying on the tape.
Mm.
Like, and not so they consider the tape useless. So the roommate decides to throw it in the oven, and it's just like you have these moments where like you could have the plot explained to us, but he decides to nah, I'm not gonna explain it. It's like you know how you watch a movie with somebody and they continually ask you questions, and you're just like, just watch the movie and you'll have those questions answered. That's basically telling them just watch the movie. You know,
it really does. And where it goes, and because they keep doing that, you think it's just going to be this kind of normal conspiracy movie. Okay, yes, Donald Pleasance is obviously dodgy. His son is dodgy as well. But every single time they go, hey, this might not be, this is probably what's happening. We don't need to know about that yet. And then all of a sudden, Donald Pleasance is in kabuki makeup and turning into a pig. And you're just like going, how did we get here? I'm loving it. I just don't know how this happened. And it's kind of one of those great movies that's just throwing everything at the wall. So you have mm-hmm. Christian mythology with the devil incarnate with Donald Pleasance. You have Chinese mythology and also astrology because they make a whole big thing. In fact, one of the titles for this was American Tiger because they make a huge deal out of Mitch Gaylord being the year of the tiger. He was born in the year of the tiger. So they make this big deal out of that. And it just goes from one moment to one next moment to the next moment. And you cannot believe what you're seeing because the movie is constantly trying to up itself. It's like, oh, you think that was crazy? Just wait to the next scene.
yeah, most definitely. It's like the movie gets crazier and crazier as it goes along. It's just you know, pure madness. Mm. I like how we don't get an explanation until like what, the last third of the movie when like he finally goes back to Madame Luna and like she finally gives like an explanation, and that how him and the skeevy thumbless son were born in the same year, 1966, and astrology 99 99, mm-hmm. and like one is good and one is evil, and like Scott, the Mitch Gaylord's character, is the good one and the kid was the evil one. So it's like, you know, an alpha and omega kind of thing, and it's just like, holy shit, this is a lot.
Yes. It is a lot to take in. And I can't imagine someone having, I will have to watch this movie again because I want to take it all in because I think I was missing stuff because I was too busy going, wait, what? And a lot of it, but it is just because it's throwing everything at you. But because it's Sergio Martino, he knows how to keep it kind of balanced. Like, I love the kind of, when you brought up Pieces, it's kind of a cool counterbalance movie because Pieces is throwing, again, everything at the wall, but it's moments of some things will work, some things won't, some things are just crazy because they're meant to be crazy. With American Rickshaw, it is, everything's of a piece, everything leads the next thing. It just keeps going bigger and bigger and crazier until you're getting to that third act, and when it's just the restraints are off and it's just going, well, full bore, which, the pun intended, but it's just no, it's an insanely glorious movie. And I love the fact that both are great directors, But I've got the feeling that Sergio Martino had control over the whole thing because he just knew how to work with Gaylord. He knew, yep, he's a better actor. He's showing intensity when he needs to. He's doing well. But I know not to put the whole movie on his shoulders because you've got David Green monologuing every single time he's about to kill someone, which I love so much. I love the fact that you have Donald Pleasance in there going big. So it can kind of, and I love Kobe's performance and the cat and everything else. It's just, he keeps throwing things in there to sort of balance everything out, like yin and yang, like this movie, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. The, I love old Madame Luna, by the way. Like, she is my favorite character in the movie, you know, like that old wise mystic Chinese witch. You know, she just sits in a wheelchair in her big penthouse, basically, like, I guess, overseeing everything that's happening with him, which makes it kind of creepy, too, because, like, she can see everything that's happening, like, I guess, through, like, you know, like, she has otherworldly visions and all that stuff. And the scene where Scott is having sex with Joanna for the first time when, you know, he discovers the... Before he discovers the camera and it cuts to her, and obviously she can see what's happening. So it's basically, so she's about to watch him fuck right now. And she's like, she's smiling too. And it's like, ooh, that's kind of creepy. You know, she's just watching this kid. And like, you know, she says she's known him from years ago, like, you know, because she was there to protect him because he was the chosen one, you know, because he's the alpha in this whole situation. So she's basically his protector. But like, yeah, you're basically just, you know, as like clairvoyantly watching his him have sex with this girl. It's totally in place with this movie, you know.
It really is. It's like a lot of Martino's movies. It is all about voyeurism. Like, it's all about people watching other people do very, very dodgy things, whether it's through keyholes or visions or through a door with a camera. He's always got that sort of quality about his movies, and he just brings it here full thing. So and I love her performance as well, because she's kind of she's very omnipotent, you're right, because she's sitting up in a big condo and she's kind of watching over everything and kind of helping him when he needs it. Like, she's the one setting the fires, isn't she, in the apartment and on the boat, or is that something else?
No, it's her because that's her way of like protecting him, like, you know, she set the fire, like, get out of there.
Yes. So every single time the cops are about to close in on him, like when he's, because he realizes he's got the wrong tape. So he goes back to the boat. And that's when I think he discovers that the son has been killed. But then the police are about to come up to the boat. And then, of course, this fire suddenly starts. And so but it's all this running joke that every single time there's a fire start, it's because the police are coming and all they see is him running away.
It's
kind of making him look more guilty than he actually is.
most definitely.
I'm just like, maybe don't start the fire, because then if he just kind of talked to them firsthand, maybe they could have worked something out. But no, she keeps starting a fire, he runs away, and the cops are like going, that guy who's running away, he is obviously guilty, we need to find him.
right.
I just kind of love those little bits and pieces where you just can kind of just go, ah, okay, because it's not like, it's edited in a way that everything's kind of built up. Like, you get the letter saying, oh, I'm going to explain that you're the chosen one at the beginning, you just don't read it, or you cannot hear what's on the tape, or you only know that someone's out to kill him. And I love David Green's performance as the hitman. By the way, everyone has a mullet in this movie. This is 1986 Miami, and apparently the hairstyle was the mullet. But every single time he's about to kill someone, he'll explain exactly why he's going to kill them. Like, the scene with the roommate is absolutely glorious, especially when he finds out he's had the tape in the oven.
The roommate is great too. I like when after everything is going on and Scott is sleeping, and he was like, "Hey, look, man, did you know how that guy was? He was the son of this guy." Like, I'm starting to think you did kill him, and he started strangling him. Don't you ever say that? Don't you ever say that again? Scott, you're strangling me.
Yeah, this, he said that's, for someone who's innocent, he does have some really odd reactions to, yeah. And you know that he's innocent. It shows you never in question whether Mitch Gaylord is innocent of this murder. But it just, and then, yeah, it sets everything up perfectly. But then it feels like Donald Pleasance is like the coming out of the blue and doing things. Like, I never saw him, the reason why he wants that boar figurine, I think it's a boar, isn't it? Yes. That he wants that. His master plan is to get this boar figurine because it's the boar of knowledge, or he'll know all, or something like that. Essentially, I think it's the witch's power that he wants. And it's just this hilarious moment where you're like, what? Where did this come from? Oh, what? Wait. And it's, you're constantly going, what, wait, in this movie, but in the best possible way, because then you realize, holy shit, I'm in a completely different movie than I thought going in. This is not a typical late 80s Italian crime movie. It's actually something completely different. It has got this amazing kind of, the horror is at the edge of the screen. I wouldn't exactly call it a horror movie, but I would definitely call it horror adjacent.
Yeah, yeah. It's I remember after I saw it, I was supposed to write a review for it, and it's like, I don't even know where to start. Like,
how?
Where do I, like, yeah, like, cause I write for, usually I write for action movie sites, and it's like, how do I even I mean, it has sequences, like, you know, it has fight scenes in it, chase scenes in it, but it's like, you can't classify this as action. You can't really classify this as horror either. It's just so many things. It's just like a big, like, it's just gumbo, you know what I'm saying? It's just, but it's this glorious gumbo, you know, the best kind of gumbo there is, you know. It's just a mixture of everything, and it just works perfectly.
No, you're right, it is absolutely gumbo, because you can't call it a crime movie either. Yes, it has all those elements. It has the elements of action, it has the elements of a crime or a thriller, and it has the elements of horror, but you can't call them any of that. It's this undefinable movie in a lot of ways, because it's just, Martino is just going for, well, going for gold and essentially what he's trying to do with it. But I can kind of see why it's sad. I think this movie almost got lost, and I'm glad that it isn't, because I think it's a movie that needs to be talked about, because it is a special one in his Martino's filmography. But at the same time, I can understand how this movie slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
Because I love the fact that only the Italians would make a ripoff 3 years after Big Trouble in Little China, which I think it is. Just like, I know that Big Trouble bombed in the States, but it kind of feels like the kind of movie that would do well in Europe, or well-ish in Europe, especially Italy, because it is this crazy, bombastic, fun movie that would get your attention, even though I think even in the late 80s, people weren't necessarily going to the movies in Italy like they were back in the 70s. But they were still renting, and the kind of movie that feels like it would fit, because it's this amazing blend of genres. And so, they would, of course, because it's the 80s Italy, they're like, yeah, let's make Big Trouble in Little China. And then they make American Rickshaw because they're Italian. And that's it's kind of the best example of why I love Italian genre movies. It's because of this.
Yeah, most definitely. It was funny too, because like you mentioned, like the earlier sequence where we first meet Scott and Madame Luna, like he gives her a ride on the rickshaw, and it's just so visually beautiful. It's real dreamlike, you know. He's taken for a ride through the rain, but like it's bright and sunny, and it's in glorious slow motion. And it's beautiful, and you have a lot of sequences like that, but then you also have a lot of sequences where it's like film, like, oh yeah, this is an Italian production.
Oh yeah.
Like you know, those static shots, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, this is definitely an Italian production. But you know, it's just, that's the charm of this movie, you know. It's definitely an Italian production, but it's just like one of the most wildest, craziest shits you ever seen, you know. And it's just, yeah, like I wanted to discuss this, but sometimes it's really hard to find the words and like how to describe it and how much you love it, because it's like, I think if we sat there and tried to do a breakdown of the plot and shit, we'd be here for like 4 hours.
And I'd be asking questions, because I still don't know what happened in this movie, to be honest. I love it. I loved watching it. I have images, especially that first one you were talking about, of them at the Berkshire on the rain, because it's shot so beautifully, and this movie can be very gauzy. and very beautiful. And then you have the stock Italian shot. But then it's a really hard movie to break down because it's hard to describe. You have to be able to watch it to get the experience of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely, it has something that, you know, that old saying, it has to be seen to be believed.
Oh, yes.
You know, yeah, like, also, you know, like, watching it, I'm like, is the rickshaw service also doubling as, like, a prostitution service? Because, like, they seem like, the men there seem to be, like, almost kind of, like, prostitutes in a way. Mm. Like, because right before Joanna shows up, you have the scene where he's talking to one of the coworkers and he's asking where the roommate is, and he's like, oh, he's in the house laid up. Mm-hmm. And then the guy shows up, and he doesn't give him a destination. He just is like, you know, shows up, and he's like, hey, come on, let's go. And it's like, are they prostitutes? Like, are they male prostitutes too, as well as rickshaw drivers? Like, I kind of got the feeling that they were.
I think they are. I think you're right, because when Joanna comes up, she's just instantly goes for the rickshaw driver, or she goes for Mitch, sort of Gaylord. And you sort of get the feeling that this is kind of the red light district of Miami or Rome or wherever they ended up shooting this.
Right.
And it's kind of, you've got this kind of feeling that he doesn't quite understand where he is. Like, he's like, yeah, I'll help my friend out. He'll be fine. He'll still get his money and it'll be fine. But he doesn't, his friends obviously left out an important note of, oh, by the way, I have been doing some sex work on the side because I can't live on tips alone. And it's just this kind of weird thing where you're like, oh, yeah, I don't think he told his friend about what actually he does. And it's, because it's, again, I keep going back because it's Martino. He was a gloriously beautiful, sleazy director, or still is because the man's still alive, thank goodness. But he kind of does this thing where, Mitch Gaylord is a babe in the woods. He doesn't quite understand the world he's gotten himself into, which is much more adult, much more sexual, much more kind of powerful than he's used to as being this humble student. And now he's in over his head, and all he can kind of do is run away and threaten to stab woman with hypodermic needles.
yeah. That scene is just like he threatens her with it. You scream and I'll stab you with this. I found it in the gutter. I'm sure you know about AIDS. And it's like, what?
It's such pure Italian line. It's just like, yes, of course they would say that. It's just the threat. Yeah, we get it. You're holding a needle. We get the threat.
Like, you didn't need to add all that. I'm sure just stabbing her with a needle you found in the garbage would be fine enough. Why you needed to add in this anecdote about AIDS is just beyond us.
I know. It's like, we get it. Even people in 1989 would get that reference. It was a big epidemic, like huge. it's just wild. It's a movie that tries to over-explain itself, but never explains itself, because when you sort of said about those half-finished exposition moments of the letter and the videotape and everything else, it's kind of going out of its way to explain things, but then it explains nothing at the same time. So when you do get to that final act and everything's just, you know, snakes attacking Donald Pleasance and that, I love that cat so much. It's the best cat. As a cat owner, it's just this kind of weird thing of like, how did we get here? And when you, which is why you said it's too hard to explain the plot. All you can sort of say is, Donald Pleasance gets attacked by a snake and turns into a pig. You'll just have to go with it because you'll get it when you're watching it. But me saying these things, if someone's going, either I'm ordering this now because I need this in my life, or what language are you speaking?
You're right, most definitely. You just gotta trust us. You gotta watch it. Your life will be better for it, because we sure as hell can't tell you what the hell this is about.
No, I was kind of worried going into this, because I was sort of last night I was finishing up my notes going, I don't know actually how, what is this? I was kind of worried. I'm like, I want to talk about this movie because it's great and I really loved it, but at the same time I don't know what this thing's about. Which is pure Italian as well. But usually I thought I had a handle on Italian genre movies, because like, I think I know how they work. I think I know. And then I watched this one and I'm like, oh, I know nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You have seen nothing, until you've seen this one.
It's absolutely glorious. It's sort of, it's, oh God, Sergio Martino. I'm so excited. I bought this triple box set from Arrow and I'm so excited to get it. Cause it's just going to be, it's giallo, some of his giallo movies, but he has this way of making the most illogical thing kind of make sense. And I think it's true in this one as well.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Absolutely.
Anything else you want to say about the glorious movie that was American Rickshaw, if you've actually conveyed anything about it?
Just watch. Trust us. Yeah. Just watch it. It gets a high recommendation from me if you want to see some just insanity. Regardless, all things we said about Mitch Gaylord in our American Anthem conversation, he is, pretty good, decent, I might say. He's very fine leading man in this movie, as a kid on the run who doesn't really know what's going on. And, he's thrust into this world where he's just kind of like the chosen one in aspects of this battle between good and evil. And, he's trying to find his way in it all. And he plays that fairly well, of course, he's not going to win no Oscar, but, he's very, a lot more natural, like we were saying, and he's good. And he does well in the proceedings because everything around him is batshit bonkers, but he handles it very well, I like that, that he made the necessary adjustments to give, a lot better performance. I will say, though, there's a scene that annoys me where he realizes he's wanted for the murder of his roommate and Donald Pleasant's son, and he just runs for no reason. he sees the cops coming, but they didn't see the news. So why does he just start running? He tries to run, and he knocks the lady down, which draws attention to himself. And it's like, you see, now they're chasing you. You could have just calmly walked away and shit, and you would have been fine. But no, you had to run away. You knocked the lady down, and now they're chasing you and shit.
Yes.
But, that's the one thing I was just like, I moments like that annoys me. Like, you see, you dick. Look what you did now.
He is not good at this. That's what I kind of love about his character. Yeah. He is not good at being on the run. He is not good at being falsely accused of murder. When you watch The Fugitive, which is another movie I love, Richard Kimball's actions are smart and probably a bit too smart. Like, he doesn't make any mistakes, but he's very good at being on the run. Mitch Gaylord is not that.
But it definitely works because he's a kid and this is all new to him, so he panics at the drop of a man, which most people probably would.
It's probably the more natural reaction, to be honest. Yes.
yeah it definitely is. So I just find that part annoying, but other than that, I think he's fine in the movie. I think Daniel Green is fine as the menacing hitman bodyguard and all that stuff, and Donald Pleasance is a joy, even though he's obviously waiting for his check to clear. And it's just absolute insanity of a movie, and it deserves to be watched. So if you could find it, please check it out.
I would say this is worth a blind buy. Say this is because I'm kind of glad that someone put it on blue, but it's kind of one of those ones where I think still might be hard to see in the future. So I think this is definitely one where I would just go, just spend the money and get it, because I don't think you will regret having this movie on your shelf or owning it, being able to show friends. I think this is a great party movie. So this is kind of one of those movies I'm like, absolutely blind by this, because it's just too great.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Also, the slip cover is no longer available for it. I know it went into second print, but the artwork is definitely just amazing for this Blu-ray. Like, Cauldron did a great job. They did a 2K scan of from the camera negative. They had some nice special features on it, and the image is just beautiful. The clear blue skies, stuff the Miami never looked better, and everything just looked glorious. Unfortunately, the producer of the Blu-ray attempted to get Mitch Gaylord, to do an interview with him, and Mitch Gaylord said, absolutely not.
Oh, no.
So I'm guessing he doesn't think fondly of this movie in hindsight, which is a shame, because I think he's fine in the movie, and it would have been cool to see his thoughts on what he thought about it, you know. But it is what it is. It's a terrific Blu-ray, and if you can find it, I highly recommend you seek it out, because it's great.
No, I would agree with that. It's kind of sad, I guess, that he doesn't have fond memories, or he's thinking, oh, God, it's that time I was in that Italian schlock. But it is brilliant Italian schlock, and it'd be interesting to hear his thoughts on the making of it, especially working with Sergio. I think it would be absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, give this movie love, please, because it is an incredible experience. And with that, Rob, now, you are one of the greatest pluggers that I know, as in terms of promoting other people and people that you really love's work as much as your own, because you should really be listening to Action Drunkies. If you're not, I will plug that straight away. But please, if there's anything you want to plug or anyone else that you want to give love to, this is your time.
Okay, sure. Like I said, the Action Drunkies, my baby, me and Mac the All-Star talk about action movies. Of course, my people over at the House of Screams, Candy the Final Girl, Shaun of the Dead, Dave Gurman, Erica Wright, Nico Nice. Of course, our good friend Mike Scott, Mikey A. Hands over at Atkins Undisputed.
Yeah.
The one of my dearest friends. Also my people over at the Action Twitter Land, Larry, Chris, Matt, Annie, like all those good people over there. Also I would like to plug my co-host Mac, my brother from another, my best friend for over 30 years. He has a upcoming he's working on an upcoming anime podcast that he's doing, All Stars Animes, where he talks about his love for anime series and movies. He's big, you know, aficionado, like almost like bordering on addictive and obsessive over them. That man really loves his anime. So I appreciate everybody going checking out when he finally drops that, because it's going to be great. He's going to be a great host.
I mean, looking forward to that, actually, just because I need to work on my anime knowledge, and I have been looking forward to this coming out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you need to ask about anything anime, he's your guy. Like he has almost an encyclopedic knowledge of anime. It's been one of his passions for years, ever since we were younger. And he's going to be a damn fine host. Like, as a matter of fact, we have our season finale at the time of this recording. It will probably already drop. But our season finale of the Action Drunkies is actually going to be a switch, where we're talking about the classic anime Fist of the North Star, and he's hosting that episode, and I'm just the co-host.
Yeah.
So yeah, he takes charge of that one, and if you listen to that, you'll know just how damn good of a host he's going to be on his own show when it comes out. So stay tuned for that.
No, that is definitely something to look forward to. I have, as soon as I heard that he was doing it, I was like, oh, interesting, just because I know a little bit of Ghibli, and that is it. So this is going to be and I've been meaning to watch more anime, so this is going to be absolutely great.
Yeah, it's gonna rule. He's just the best. That's my brother right there.
Oh yes, no, absolutely looking forward to it. Thank you so much for coming on, and thank you so much for introducing me to American Rickshaw and American Anthem. This was such a great double to watch and to talk about, because it was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on with this.
No. Thank you for having me. I love coming on your show. Like, you're one of my favorite people in the world. I love sitting and talking movies with you. That's why, for those who don't know, I keep hitting her up in the inbox, suggesting titles, just so I have an excuse to come back on, because I love it here. I love talking to Lindsay. Lindsay is great, and she's just the absolute best.
Oh, and, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I think we have a great rapport, and it's just, I want to come back as many more times as I possibly can. So you can expect more double feature suggestions from me in the future.
Yes, please. And there's a couple of other ones I'm just like going, yes, specifically one that had a Brian De Palma element to it. I'm like going, ooh. Oh, yes, and yes. That is going to be absolutely amazing. No, I love talking with you. I think you are one of the great gentlemen on Action Twitter. Well, there's Action Twitter is pretty actually amazing, of just Twitter in general. You're great to talk to. So much fun. We're definitely going to be doing this again. As I said, there was a couple of doubles. I'm just like going, oh, Yes, please. And it's going to be absolutely great. So again, thank you so much for coming on. This was great. I'm now a better person for having seen these movies, and I'm very happy. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to follow Shock and Awe, you can do that, Shock and Awe 1 at Twitter and Instagram. If you want to follow me, it's just Reading Geek. Yeah, please give Rob a follow on Action Drunkies and Cinema Drunkies, your handle?
Yeah. The Cinema Drunkie, because I couldn't fit the Cinema. Yeah, it's just the Cinema Drunkie, because I couldn't fit the Cinema Drunkie and the whole thing in there. So it's just the Cinema Drunkie.
Yes, the Cinema Drunkie, which is definitely a great, especially when he's plugging all his writing, which is an absolute must. I've got a list, very long list of movies. I'm like, I'm watching that now. So please do that. And thank you again. If you want to rate and review the show, that would be great. But yes, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with another double feature. Thank you so much, guys. All right. Bye.